Hi, and welcome to this edition of the San Diego Political Podcast from BowlersDesk.com with me, Matt Bowler, and San Diego's political professor, Rick Epps. This time we sat down with mayoral candidate Nathan Fletcher, talking about his second time around, his second bite at the apple, trying to become San Diego's mayor. He's up against Kevin Faulkner, David Alvarez, Mike Aguirre are probably the out of all of the other candidates that are on the ballot, those are the top four. Kevin Faulkner is definitely the main contender against him because Kevin has the Republican endorsement. We talked about everything from the economy, jobs, all kinds of stuff, and I found out some interesting things about Nathan. For example, he doesn't drink. I didn't know that. Maybe everybody else knew that, but I didn't know that. And that was new to me. In case you hear that, that's my son Cash here. He's helping me record. And so, you know, if you listen to anything that you think you want to talk about, something that makes you want to hop up on your soapbox, you can do that by hopping up on ours. Just give us a call at 619-663-4531. 619-663-4531. Hop on the political podcast soapbox. Tell us what you think. All right, here you go. Nathan Fletcher. Enjoy.
Yesterday, I was talking to this woman, and she works with this children's foundation. I forget, and they've worked with you on some stuff before. And Voices for Children. And she was telling me she and you know she keeps up with politics. She knows who's running. She lives in Scripps Ranch, you know. And she had no idea who Alvarez was.
Yeah.
You know, and she didn't really know who Faulkner was.
Right.
You know. She knew of him, but she didn't have that firsthand experience with him. So a lot of people, it seems like, have that kind of thing with you here in town because you've run before. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of the same thing all over again, but at warp speed right off the bat?
Well, it is. I think you know, in so many ways, we did, you know, so many years in the assembly, you know, multiple elections in a very big assembly district. But also a lot of the stuff we did there, I think goes right to what you were saying. You know, when we did Chelsea's Law, that really brought a community together, and a lot of folks remember that. And then our last run for mayor was so exciting. You know, we started out at 5 or 6% and surged within just a few points of really, really upending the status quo. And so a lot of folks remember that. Yeah. And then here we are again with, you know, a few years later, but still the basic things residents should expect not being done. You know, your streets aren't paved, your communities aren't safe. We don't have the economic opportunities we need, and that's why I think we're gaining so much traction. And so whether it's a short election cycle or a long election cycle, I think the facts are plain that the residents are ready for a mayor who's going to figure out how to move us forward. And that's why I think we're gaining so much traction.
But, I mean, you were known before, too. That's the thing.
Yeah.
I think you were known more outside of your district than Faulkner was. Faulkner
right.
seems to be very, you know, he was definitely, what he's got the kind of that PB-ish now. I forget how they redrew his district.
Yeah, they redrew it. He's at the PB sort of Bird
But it's
Rock.
Like it's like a higher end PB.
Yeah,
it's not like
Steve's yeah, it's Bird PB. Rock. It's the Bird Rock.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah.
It's not Donna Frye's old district. It's not the same.
But I think you stand out. I mean, it's certainly not a length of time someone's been in office. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's not what makes you known. I think the reason people know you is that record of getting things done. You know, whether we were delivering money to invest in neighborhoods in San Diego. Whether we were driving things to create good-paying jobs, whether we were resolving janitor strikes, whether we were passing Chelsea's Law. I mean, you know, time and again, even the short time I was in elected office, we got a lot of things done. And then the ideas we advanced in the mayor's race, I think, are still front and center. You know, we were talking about public safety. We were talking about investing in neighborhoods. We were talking about good jobs. And so I think San Diegans know that, you know, that ability to get things done and bring people together. And you know, at a wide level, because, you know, some of the other folks have been in office for a long time, and there's just not a track record of accomplishment to point to.
So here's an interesting thing, because you were in the state assembly, and so now you're looking at the local politics arena. How has your time in the state assembly helped benefit you in terms of looking at localized issues? How has that benefited you?
Well, I mean, all politics is local, and it's one of the reasons why I think mayor's the best job in the world. Mm-hmm. Because the policies that you impact and the things you do have a direct tie. People see it directly. They feel it directly. you know, when they've got a sidewalk and a streetlight that they may not have had for 20 years, and you're able to work with a member of the council and have it happen, you have such a greater impact. But I think the experience in Sacramento is really useful and helpful. I mean, I was a part of negotiating four $100 billion budgets. I was a part of some of the largest healthcare reform that we've done, ensuring that so many Californians can maintain their healthcare. I was a part of tax reform to close a loophole that benefited out-of-state corporations and actually invest that money in Californians so that the middle-class kids could have scholarships to go to UCs and Cal States. And that was an example. We brought business and labor. We brought everyone together. And so I think the experience is just helpful in terms of having a track record of kind of bucking the status quo and being able to deliver. And so I think the combination of having led Marines in combat, of having demonstrated in a government political entity that we can get things done, and then you add on the private sector experience of having really been mentored at Qualcomm and how large organizations work and function, gives me really, I think the ideal resume to come in and take over as mayor.
Who was your mentor at Qualcomm?
We had a number of folks who mentored me there. Obviously, Paul Jacobs, the chairman and CEO, has spent a lot of time and really helped me, you know, understand the leadership role that you play. You know, they're an organization.
So how are you? What's up? Give me a parallel. What are you going to take from Qualcomm?
I'll give you one example. We do. You know, Qualcomm's about probably three times the size of the city of San Diego in terms of number of employees. But one of the things that we do is we do global climate surveys, where we assess the motivation, the happiness, the inspiration of our employees. And the reason we do it is because a motivated, inspired employee is a productive employee. It's an employee that works harder. You get voluntary effort. Well, the city hasn't done those in a long time. Well, as I've said, as mayor, we're going to go out and we're going to do that. We're going to survey all the city workers. Do you understand your job and your mission and your purpose? Do you feel good about what you do? Do you feel a sense of service? And you identify management problems. You know, when you do that, you can hone in on a particular department or division where clearly there's a problem with the management. And I think that is helpful. The other thing I've said I'm going to do as mayor is do surveys of the customers of the city. So if you go down to get a permit, we want you to fill out a little online survey afterwards, which will also help us make sure that we're delivering the services we need to do. So that's one specific area. Another area is there is a real opportunity, I think, you know, in the private sector, and I'm the only candidate running that has private sector experience. We're constantly looking for efficiencies. We're constantly looking for better ways to do things. We invest in our people. To make sure that we have the best and they're excited, but we're always pushing the envelope to say, is there a better way? And as mayor, I'm going to do that. I'm going to constantly say, is there a better way we can get more money into our neighborhoods? Is there a better way we can keep those libraries hours open longer? Is there a more innovative way to do to make sure that our police have the equipment and gear that they need? And find examples from around the world where folks are doing that. And I'll always be kind of really leaning forward and pushing for those ideas.
Well, you have to negotiate. How are you going to deal with labor unions and those kinds of contracts when you're looking to make management changes or labor changes? I mean, that's going to be a big...
Well, there's two points.
That could be a potential real conflict for you right there.
No, there's no conflict. I mean, I've demonstrated in the past that we can get labor and business and get folks to the table and work out an agreement for what's right. But one of the most common misunderstandings is that the management of the city of San Diego is not in a union. They're at-will employees. They work at the pleasure of the mayor. And so when you have a management problem, the mayor can address that management problem and can change those. And I think that our city employees and the groups that represent them want what we all want. They want a city that delivers effective quality services. And when we talk about city workers, I think it's important to keep in mind we're talking about the people that show up at the library to teach your children how to read. We're talking about the people that if someone is breaking into your house that come, you know, running in at 3 o'clock in the morning. We're talking about the people that pick up your trash. And I think they inherently want what we all want, which is a city that works.
Do you think the biggest challenge for the problems of the city is at the management level and not sort of a lot of other people are trying to say it's a labor problem, that's on the union.
I think the biggest problem at the city of San Diego right now is a status quo mentality and mindset led primarily by the leadership that isn't focused on solutions. So here again, you know, over the last 7 to 10 years, we've seen our police department be decimated. You know, we have officers that are leaving. We have a smaller force than we've ever had. We have a smaller force than almost any other major city in America, and they haven't made it a priority. And I've said as mayor, my highest priority is going to be rebuilding the city, starting with investing in our neighborhoods, making sure that they're safe, and then creating economic opportunities. And so I think in some instances we've had misplaced priorities, and in others we've had a lack of will and leadership to figure out how to get it done.
What's a misplaced priority that you want to shift?
Well, so I'll give you an example. Over the course of the last 10 years, we've seen our fire department decimated, our police department decimated. We've seen our roads go from the fourth worst. We were the fourth worst. We're now the fourth worst. We were the eighth worst. We're now the fourth worst. Right? We've seen our roads get worse. Now, people say, well, we didn't have any money. But during that same time frame, we found tens of millions of dollars for Tourism Marketing District. We found almost $600 million for our convention center. It wasn't that there was a lack of money. It was that there was a lack of priority on the things that regular San Diegans should deserve. And if I'm the mayor, we're going to invest in those regular things that San Diegans should deserve and accept. Safe communities, smooth streets, and some economic opportunities.
There's two things I want to touch on with you that I think are really key here. And the first one has to do with economics. And I think it's really key because I'm a native San Diegan. I've been here for born and raised here, right? And I expected San Diego to be, you know, being one of the, it was at one point the eighth largest city. I think we're ninth largest city in the country now.
I think we're still eighth.
Eighth. Okay. Yeah.
We fight with Dallas for seven.
Yeah, but one thing I've always struggled with is that we've always sort of wallowed in our mediocrity.
Right.
In terms of, when you look at downtown, downtown is full of high rises that are half empty. It's full of very little business. And you look at the infrastructure of downtown. And then that tells you a little bit about the viability and the health of your economy. And I agree with you, by the way, and what you said earlier about the sort of status quo mentality that's been so pervasive that it's really hamstrung our communities. And I just wanted to kind of quickly ask, what were some of the things that you, in terms of trying to rebuild the economic structure, to make the city get past, it's almost like you have to change the psychology of the individuals and saying to citizens to say, look, if we want to be the great city we can become, we need you to buy into the future of where San Diego needs to go.
It's almost like San Diego's been on the verge of success for the last 50 years.
Yeah. Right.
I remember my grandfather doing stories about this in the Evening Tribune, telling me about that. You know, John Steiner wrote columns about the San Diego being on the verge of success.
Well, we've definitely had a rough period. I mean, three of the last six mayors have resigned.
I mean, it's not, well, yeah, but I mean, I don't even think it's like rough. We never seem to
bouncing along.
We never seem to do our best.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I think is the choice that this will come down to as an election. Is, do you want just a status quo kind of way it's always been done? Or do we actually want to invest? Do we actually want to see us make strides to get to a point where residents feel like they're getting what they deserve? And on the economic basis is really important because, you know, we're more than a convention destination. And I think that it's time that we start investing as much in the people that live here 365 days a year as the people that come for a weekend. And so I laid out a plan where we said we want to do three things in rebuilding our economic base. The first is a rebranding as the world's most innovative or creative city, because that is the future of the economy. It is those innovative, those creative jobs. We want to be a startup culture. We want to invent a San Diego brand. We want to do incubators, and we have a lot of things there. And those jobs are the jobs of the future, and they're good-paying jobs. Yeah. You can buy a home. You can put your kids in college. You know, great jobs. But the reality is, for a lot of San Diegans, those jobs may be or appear to be out of reach.
Yeah.
And those are like middle-class jobs, right? Those are when if you're going to buy a home and send your kids.
Let me finish this thought because you'll see where I'm going with it. So those are kind of the innovative technology jobs, probably require an advanced degree from a really good university. But we have seen an erosion in the middle-class jobs you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And that erosion is quantifiable. In the recession, we've seen a quantifiable erosion of the middle class. It's on the verge of being gone, of collapse.
Yeah.
In the last 4 years in this supposed recovery, we've seen the average hourly wages of American workers go down. And so if we keep trying to apply old solutions to new problems, we're never going to get out of this. And so I've said we want to innovate those ideas and invent those ideas, but then we want to be the place that makes the product. Yeah. And there's a lot of manufacturing that's coming back to America. And so I've called in my job plan for the creation of a high-tech manufacturing center along the Otay Mesa border with Mexico. There's a lot of land down there. It's owned prime industrial. We can do a lot of things and have a real partnership with Mexico. So that both sides of the border are seeing economic prosperity, which is good for us all. So we want to invent the idea, we want to make the product, and then we want to sell that product to the rest of the world. 90% of the world's customers live outside of America, and a lot of cities. Portland has done some amazing things. Chicago has done some amazing things. And I believe that we can triple the number of San Diego businesses that export their products by adopting a smart export strategy. And what that does is helps our businesses that are here, but it also increases traffic at the port, and those are good jobs. And so two-thirds of our economic plan is exactly what you described. It's a good-paying job where you can buy a home, you can put your children in college, you can have a secure retirement, kind of live the American dream. But then your children may, you know, you may do all that without a college degree. You know, our manufacturing center, our export, our port, a lot of those are vocational. You got to have a skill, but you can graduate high school, get a skill, you can get that job. But then you can put your kids in UCSD and get them a chemistry degree or get them an engineering degree, and they can go get one of those high-tech, high-skill jobs. And that is what I think is the future of the economic base. And if the mayor will view themselves as a regional leader and really adopt those things, I think there's a huge opportunity for us.
The other thing I wanted to ask about, and then we're going to continue on, it deals with education. I have many, of course, I'm an educator, but also dealing with it, I have many friends that are teaching K through 12 here that have classroom overload that is just ridiculous. And even in the first, second, third grade, I mean, 30, 40, 30, 35, 40 kids in a class almost. How do we get the citizens in the city to sort of buy into the fact that, you know, doing away with schools and having larger classrooms is really doing a lot of damage to our kids? And how do we expand our education within our communities so that, one, it's top-notch, should be, you know, the idea of having kids have to, the idea of choosing kids in the school, which now they even do in grade school, is just mind-boggling to me that you can't, that your neighborhood school...
Every neighborhood should have a good school.
Yeah, right. That instead of having to, you know, say, well, I'm going to send my kid over here because my school that's a block away.
Well, in the your first mayoral run, I remember this kind of was an issue a little bit, and a lot of the people were saying, well, city doesn't have anything to do with educating kids.
That's not true, though.
Well, I think every elected official...
That was the other side of that.
Yeah, but every elected official at every level of government should care about education. I mean, I have two boys, 5 and 2... my oldest is in kindergarten in San Diego Public Schools, and I think everyone's got to wants to commit to that same goal. The question is how you do it, and I've had a number of great conversations with Cindy Martin, who's the current superintendent, mm-hmm. and she said there's a lot of things the mayor can specifically do to help our schools. Some of it's permitting, some of it's joint use, some of it's providing support when there's initiatives or things that need to happen. And so I said, as mayor, I'll play an active role in doing that. But I think that there's two other parts of what a mayor can do that are important. One is K through 12. The other is partnering with groups like the Workforce Partnership, because there's a lot that the city can do in partnership there. You know, we have a lot of folks that are out there that are out of work right now that are hardworking, and they'd work hard every day. They just don't have the skills for the jobs that are available today. And so a lot of times we have an education system and a workforce training system that maybe trained you for a job that no longer exists. And so getting those folks in a job training program to give them a skill and put them back out into the workforce, get them in an apprenticeship program, you know, get them in something good. So I think K through 12, and then you have kind of the vocational education job training program. And then the third is really supporting our higher education institutions. And those are the future of the innovative economies. And as mayor, I think there's a lot of things you can do to work to support them as well.
I want to go back to that TMD. You're talking about how the TMD was getting a lot of money that maybe you could use back in the community. I mean, and that was something that, at least superficially, it seemed like Filner was going after, trying to do as well, even though maybe the way he went about it was probably not the best, most diplomatic way to handle it. But so how do you confront the team? I mean, the TMDs, they're kind of power players, and they want to keep their money.
You're mistaken what I said earlier. Uh-huh. I don't have a problem that the TMD advertises for San Diego, I think tourism is an important part of our economy. My point was, we've watched entire sections of our city be completely decimated while we've only focused on that. I support the convention center expansion. I'm fine with the TMD advertising for our city. What I'm saying is the same spirit and energy that managed to get those done needs to be put to work investing in neighborhoods. Because if you live in a neighborhood that doesn't have a street light or a sidewalk or has to wait an excessive amount of time for a first responder, you don't understand how we found all this money for these other things. And, you know, maybe they're worthwhile programs and projects, But I think that our focus has to return to doing those basic things that cities have to do. And my point is, we hear a lot of excuses about, well, we haven't had enough money to do those things. But yet they've managed to find money to do other things. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a question of priorities.
Where are they finding this money to do these other things then? Are they taking it from the police department and out of the general fund?
No, they created different districts. They created different financing mechanisms. The convention center does take about $3.5 million a year from the city general fund. The hoteliers have paid. Mm-hmm. But I guess the point I'm making is, imagine if the same energy and effort had been put forward to finding a way to invest in our neighborhoods.
Why don't you think they wanted to do that?
You should ask them. I don't know. I haven't been on the council for the last decade. I mean, you should ask the people that have been sitting on the council for the last decade who've watched our city services be decimated.
They would say, we've been trying to do this, and you know, we're also trying to improve jobs and improve the economy, and they see tourism and they see the convention center as a way of improving jobs and improving the economy.
Well, they can tell people in neighborhoods why they found money for everything except neighborhoods.
This is the thing I was going to speak to, was the fact of when you look at the neighborhoods, and we had spoken in another one of our interviews about the idea of decentralizing or decentralization of the jobs are set up in our city. So there's some of the areas, like Elkhorn's its own entity, but we have areas, pockets of areas where you have growth, like you have Sonoma Valley,
mm-hmm.
for example, where you have now where Qualcomm is, right? But creating more areas in the city where we have, you know, where we can develop economies, mm-hmm. localized economies, mm-hmm. and also to help small businesses as well. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things I think we've really done a very poor job of is really developing small business infrastructure in the city. And the truth of the matter, when you want to develop a strong economy, the bottom line is your people in your city have to be able to go and buy goods and services, or afford to be able to buy goods and services. We know in San Diego for a fact that the cost of living versus the income levels in our city is a huge disparity. Compared to most major cities.
So we're the eighth largest city in the country, and I think we pay at like the 26th, 20th level in the city.
And you're talking about the cost of living versus the wages.
Versus the wages. And we're also the fifth most expensive city in the country.
Right.
Yeah.
But so. I think the point you make is the right one, in that we have 52 neighborhoods in San Diego, mm-hmm. and each of them need to be allowed to develop with their own character and feel. And for a lot of neighborhoods, that means a lot more mixed use, mm-hmm. where you can live and work and play in the same community.
Yeah.
A lot of them, it means a lot more livable, walkable, bikeable communities. And then figuring out, how do we take these 52 neighborhoods and connect them via transit and via ways for folks to get around? Because there's a younger generation that doesn't want to live in Scripps Ranch and drive downtown.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, they want to have a little bit more of this creative, innovative urban experience where they live, they work, they play, they have arts and culture and parks and
like
transit.
North Park is
something they've got to build. They don't want to have a car.
Yeah. Yeah.
They want to take the $700 or $800 you might spend, you know, on a car and take trips and travel. Yeah. And you know, that goes back to making sure that the basic things are done, that community plans are done, that there's a proper investment in infrastructure, and that we've invested in those neighborhoods and we allow them to develop that way.
How do you prevent the gentrification in those neighborhoods? Yeah. Like North Park used to be the place where a lot of working class people could go and afford to live. And now it seems to, because of all of the kind of the hipper crowd has moved in, they've kind of priced everyone out of that market, you know?
Well, one of the first things that we need to do is make sure that we have a balanced economy so folks have the opportunity to get good paying jobs. And we can't have a focus, you know, which is a lot of what we're talking about. If folks have access to manufacturing jobs and export jobs, then they'll have the ability to stay in those areas. And then B, you've got to work with the local community groups when you do those community plans to make sure that communities are allowed to preserve and maintain their unique culture and feel and heritage.
I have an issue, a complicated question here. It's more of a philosophical one, because it has to do with with all the contentiousness that we see that's even happening at the national level, that happens at localized level, when you're dealing with people who either don't understand the big picture, when you're trying to move forward or move a city forward from the mediocrity that it seems to be so pervasive sometimes in the city. How are you going to confront how are you going to fight the fights? That's what I want to ask you. In terms of building consensus, reaching across the aisles to try and get people to buy into your plan, or even trying to give them the hard truth. Sometimes people don't want to hear the hard truth. Sometimes you have to spend a little more in the short term so that you can have a long-term gain. How do you get people to buy into that and buy into what you believe is your vision of the future?
Well, it's leadership, and ultimately being mayor of the city is about leadership, and who has that ability to project that idea and that vision and who has a demonstrated track record of getting folks to the table and working it out. And that's been my entire career in politics has been defined on that. It's been defined on the ability to bring people together, to negotiate tough, to fight through and do the hard work required each and every single day to build those coalitions and deliver results. And I think, you know, San Diegans need to have a mayor that they know is going to stand up for them. And I've always been willing to stand up for what I think is right. And I've always been willing to focus first on the solution and then sit down with folks and work it out. And I think Washington, D.C. is a perfect example of the status quo, the way it's being done, just doesn't work. Yeah. And the city's no different.
Yeah. At what point what tells you need to stand your ground on particular issues, right? I was thinking about this earlier. Some people, when we're talking about D.C., some of the people in Congress, you know, they believe that they need to stand their ground on these issues. A lot of the sort of the Tea Party, for lack of a better term.
Well,
they're true believers.
I actually don't think that's a lot of it, though. I don't think a lot of them are. If you're standing your ground on principle, mm-hmm. right, then you should never compromise your principle. Mm-hmm. What they're standing their ground on is politics. Right, they're standing their ground on, I don't want to get pressure from a talk radio host, or I don't want to get pressure from a political party boss, right? But when they sit down privately and they talk, they go, yeah, this is dumb. We're shutting down the government because of a law that we don't like. Well, we lost two elections on that law, and the courts have ruled, and look, if someone's going to take a legitimate stand on principle and say, I just can't do that because I don't think it's right, I have no problem with that. I respect that. But what you see today is people who take a stand on politics. Yeah. And they say, I can't work with you because I may run against you one day and I can't let you look good. Yeah. Or I can't work with you because you're the other party and I can't dare let your party get ahead. And I've never been for that and I never will be for that. I'm someone who's always going to stand up for what I think is right for the residents of the city of San Diego and build the necessary coalition to get that done. And that's what I think we need in our next mayor.
Are there top five neighborhoods in need right now? You're running.
Well, we have a lot of neighborhoods that have been left behind. I mean, I think every neighborhood out there has streets that are in bad shape. I think every neighborhood out there has a lack of investment in parks and libraries. And we certainly have decimated our police and fire and lifeguard service who are having a difficult time. But I think that you do see a real disparity in a lot of communities. In the southern part of the city, in districts 4 and district 8, the reality is when you live in a neighborhood that doesn't have those basic things, you don't understand how every conversation is about a stadium and a convention center. Because we have seen, we've seen it with response times. You have certain communities where response times are taking 9.5 minutes, others are taking 7 minutes. Well, you know what? The children in those communities, their children are not worth less than the children in another community. And I think it's morally wrong that we've allowed some neighborhoods to be left so far behind.
Yeah, because it does seem like San Diego just struggles with that. In fact, even with the social infrastructure in our city, you know, their area, like I grew up right on the border of Lemon Grove, near College Grove, mm-hmm. as a child, and it was middle class, it was somewhat diverse, mm-hmm. and now it's become increasingly diverse in those areas, but the crime rates have gone up, you have so the social infrastructure of some of those communities also needs to be addressed as well. So in terms of education, in terms of jobs, things that are going to help edify those communities, to help the kids that are growing up, not look at it in terms of opportunities for nefarious activities, but also look at opportunities for jobs. And we know there's a struggle with kids in high school and growing up that can't find jobs now. So they end up getting into more trouble because there aren't jobs for them because right. people are staying in. And it's all backed up. Baby boomers like myself can't get out of the system. So everybody needs to work longer. So the kids that were the jobs that were high school jobs are now held by college kids. And the high school kids can't even get in the system hardly. So there's a huge problem with addressing some of these issues. And I don't know. Is there a way, or we talk about enhancing the social infrastructure of the system? Do you have ideas about?
Well, cities aren't. There's a mistaken approach. Cities aren't a collection of structures. Mm-hmm. When we talk about cities, sometimes we mistakenly talk about structures and buildings and things that we build. Cities are people, mm-hmm. And they're people first. Mm-hmm. And I think cities that invest in their people and their people having good jobs and good homes and clean communities and safe communities. Mm-hmm. Are truly become great cities. And I'll give you a specific example is a program that works. You know, you just mentioned something. You know, there's a you know, a waiting line. You know, people trying to get jobs. Chris Yanoff, who runs Reality Changers, tells me all the time he has a waiting list to get in his program. His program has demonstrated it takes kids out of communities that struggle, and it prepares them for college, and he sends these kids to Ivy League college. It's an amazing program. But he said there's no waiting line to get into a gang, but yet there's a waiting line to get into Reality Changers. And those are the types of programs that we can expand and support and help to give our people the opportunities. Now, how does that make you a better city? Well, A, we're doing the right thing by the people we represent, but take that kid who has a choice between joining a gang, who we're either going to incarcerate or bury, right? He joins that gang, we're going to incarcerate him or bury him, right? That's the reality. Or we're going to get him in a program like Reality Changes, and for pennies on the dollar, he's going to come out with a college degree and a productive member of society. I mean, you tell me what's the better path to do that, and I think that comes back to making sure we invest in our people.
All right. But more importantly, what's your favorite San Diego beer?
Oh.
The Beer City.
Yeah, I actually don't drink.
You don't drink?
No, I mean, I'm a drinker. But I did author the bill that allowed all the craft brew guys to get going. And the assembly, I did the bill. They were having huge problems because they
So you can't pick a favorite. Rachel, what's your favorite San Diego beer?
Rachel.
Is there an official Nathan?
Ballast Point.
Ballast Point.
There you go.
Okay.
There you go.
Serrano Pale
Ale. But spicy.
but I did author the legislation that allowed them to open, to allow them to operate as tasting rooms.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a unique thing. Now, San Diego's the beer city of the United States.
We're getting there.
Like,
yep.
Microbrewery, yeah.
Yeah, it's booming. Good jobs. Interesting jobs.
We're beating Boston,
yeah.
I think. We're beating, GQ named us number one for beer in the country.
Wow, that's exciting.
Because there's so much diversity. Every little bar now can, because of the, is opening... is putting a little microbrewery in the
That's
back
cool.
Of
That's cool stuff. Well, it's a huge opportunity. A lot of those guys I'm very close to and have done amazing things, and I think they're the ultimate entrepreneur, and they're booming and they're growing, and we want more of them here. And I'm happy. Andy San Diego, you know, out there that wants to go, I can drive.
Fletcher, more beer.
More beer. And I'm your designated driver. Mayor will be your designated driver. That's right.
So anything you'd like to leave with our audience to tell them in terms of your vision or anything else you'd like to share?
I think there's a great opportunity to rebuild our city, and I'm excited about that. I think we can do a lot of the things over the next decade to actually demonstrate to San Diegans that the basic things they should expect from a city are actually getting done. Not talked about, not proposed, not planned, but done. And that means that investment in neighborhoods, making sure you got smooth streets, making sure that you've got safe communities, and making sure that you have access to a good paying job. And if we do that, we will have really done something right to really right the ship and get us on the solid foundation we need to grow.
Yeah, I think that actually helps build the social psychology of the city too. Like when around your neighborhoods are clean and everything around. There's a sort of cognitive effect that really makes you feel good.
Yeah.
And I think it is pretty pervasive. I remember North Park on that 15, right at 40, right there where 40th Street is, right?
Yeah.
And they built that nice bridge across there and tried to build some parks in there. Mm-hmm. And it really changed the culture of the area in such a way that I thought was very, very, tremendous in terms of how people view themselves and feel about themselves in a community like that. And I know there's a lot of communities in San Diego that actually need that type of, that kind of feel. And some areas people are, say, oh, you can't go there, you can't go down there. And I think some of those are probably some of the safest areas you could actually go into. It's just they have a history of, because of where they're located, of having a negative impact. But but it's also going to require, people having the courage to step outside of the norm and having a vision for seeing the city grow. And sometimes you got to pull people dragging, kicking and scratching, down that road, and having a mayor that's unafraid to do that
which comes back to leadership, comes back to the basic question of leadership. So good. All right, guys, thanks for coming by.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
Good to see you guys.
Okay, man.